start the recording. And I'm going to read the fifth tradition, and then I'm going to go ahead and introduce Carrie. So the fifth tradition, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I give you Carrie B. from Bend, Oregon, talking to us tonight at Unity and Service about the fifth tradition. Thank you, Carrie.
The fifth tradition. Yes, of course. I was not prepared to do the sixth tradition. That would have been silly. oh my gosh. I might need to run and grab something real quick. I, for some reason, I was on a meeting today and it was on the sixth tradition. And yes, it was a very nice flyer, Dee. I did see it.
Actually. I had to double check. I'm sorry.
So the fifth tradition is a different tradition than what I actually had in mind for tonight, because so good thing you guys all are keeping me in line. My name is Carrie and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group, and I'm currently working steps 10, 11, and 12. And I am going to be talking about the fifth tradition tonight. I listened to an amazing sixth tradition speaker this morning at 9 o'clock. I mean, she was phenomenal, covered so much that I think I have just ever since then just been, you know, had the sixth tradition in my head. So I'm prepared for next week for sure. So the fifth tradition, this is, the long form. Let's go to the long form first in the back of our trusty AA group pamphlet. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity, having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So the fifth tradition, I'm going to go ahead and start by, well, no, first let me read. So this is our primary purpose tradition, right? This is the tradition that says we have our third tradition already, which opens the door so wide for everybody and anybody who suffers from alcoholism. We don't care what other outside issues you come in with, right? Like that's what the third tradition says. The third tradition is not a disqualifier. It's a qualifier. It says, so long as you have a problem with alcohol, you are welcome here, regardless if you also have a problem with drugs, regardless if you also have a problem with sex or gambling or food or you name it, right? Regardless what skin color you are or what who you prefer to sleep with or whatever, we are all equals. There's no second class citizens. And so the third tradition opens the door so wide because we're all inclusive. And the fifth tradition, because we're so wide and we have this door that's opened so wide that we would never be able to focus on our similarity because of all of the other stuff that comes in with us all. So the fifth tradition is saying everybody's welcome, but let's close the window on what we focus on, our one similarity. So if, you know, Dee comes in with, she's an alcoholic, right? She has a problem with alcohol, but she also has a heroin addiction. And if Lil comes in and she's an alcoholic, but she also has a gambling problem. And then Teresa comes in and she's an alcoholic, but she also has an eating disorder. And, you know, all of these people, we welcome everybody who's an alcoholic. So our rooms are pretty messy because alcoholics don't come in with just alcoholism, right? And so how do we keep the focus on our primary purpose? Well, for one, we have no opinion on any other, we don't offer a solution for anything other than alcoholism. And so that's helpful. But then we say, let's focus on our one similarity so that no one is excluded, right? So that everyone who's in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous can identify. So basically, if Dee talked about her heroin addiction at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, chances are, depending on the size of the room and where the meeting is, one or two people might be able to identify with that. You know, if Teresa talked about her eating disorder in the rooms, I bet you a couple people would be able, more than a couple people, You know, if I talk about my sugar addiction, I bet you 30% of you will be able to identify with that, right? But when I talk about my alcoholism, 100% of everyone in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous should be able to identify. And everybody is able to achieve that magic of me too, right? And now I'm not saying that outside issues should never be talked about. If they're an issue, so let me, this is the tricky part. Drugs, not an outside issue. Sex, not an outside issue. Eating, not an outside issue. Alcoholics, or at least an alcoholic like me, when I get drunk, I'm sorry, but sex, drugs, and rock and roll just come with that, right? And just because, so what is an outside issue is drug addiction. Drug addiction is an outside issue in Alcoholics Anonymous. An eating disorder, that is an outside issue in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have no opinion on the solution to that. A gambling addiction. Now, just because I wake up with someone every time I go out and drink and it's a different guy every night and I have no idea who I'm waking up next to, doesn't necessarily mean that I have a sex addiction. It might mean I have a problem with alcohol. Just because I lost $2,000 in the casino last night in a blackout doesn't necessarily mean that I have a gambling addiction. It might mean I have some unmanageability around my alcoholism, right? Just because I have to snort lines of coke in the bathroom so that I can drink as much as I need to drink doesn't necessarily mean that I have a coke addiction. It means I'm an alcoholic, right? Just because I can't stay on a diet when I'm drunk because I crave fried food doesn't mean I have an eating disorder. It means that I'm a drunk. It means that I have a problem with alcohol, right? So so sex, drugs, and rock and roll, they're just the same thing as mentioning your DUI or you're cheating on your spouse or whatever, you know, while you're drunk. Now, those aren't outside issues if they're not issues. For me, I don't have an eating disorder, right? And when I was drunk, I craved fried food. So I'm going to be able to talk about that. I actually don't. I keep this super clean because of how over the top we've become in kind of this Everything's Anonymous fellowship, that I personally don't. But it doesn't break tradition if I do, right? So telling part of my story, if I say that I had to do coke to drink the way I needed to drink, that wouldn't be an outside issue unless I was actually became addicted to cocaine and I was a coke addict and I was here trying to recover from my cocaine addiction. Then it's an outside issue. If it's an issue, it's an outside issue. So what I suggest to the women that I sponsor about this is, I sponsor this woman who, she did a lot of drugs, but she's not a drug addict. She's never become addicted to anything, right? And part of her story was, you know, she had to come, trying not to tell a whole lot of it, but she worked in a pharmacy, and in order to stop the shakes and the detoxing, she knew what would help her to stop the shakes and the detoxing at work. She worked in the pharmacy. So she got fired when they caught her taking these things. Now, she never became addicted to this stuff. She wasn't a drug addict. She was just such a low bottom drunk that she couldn't work without drinking or taking a sedative so that she didn't, right? So that's not an outside issue. That's her alcoholism. Now, I don't care. I mean, yeah, go ahead and tell that in your story. It has super to do with alcoholism. I also sponsor a genuine heroin addict. She's an alcoholic, but she is also a genuine heroin addict. Like, her heroin addiction was going to take her out. She also is a member of a fellowship called Heroin Anonymous. This woman, when she's in an AA meeting, you would never know that she did any other drugs because she respects the fact that is an outside issue for her because it's an actual issue. So she doesn't even mention, she won't say drinking and using. In fact, she was a member of my home group for her first year of sobriety. And she was asked to present on the fifth tradition at our Singleness of Purpose workshop that we did back in, I don't know, a few years back, 4 years ago, at my home group. And she actually ended up using her story as part of the point of the fifth tradition. And after the meeting, after it was a big workshop, and I had tons of people coming up to me going, I had no idea. I didn't even know she did other drugs. And it's like, that's because she respects the traditions. She doesn't say drinking and using. She doesn't say clean and sober. She sticks to alcohol and alcoholism because she does have an outside issue. And we don't want to cross, you know, confuse those lines. So I'm going to read the primary purpose statement. AA's primary purpose statement is on page 18 of the AA group pamphlet. The primary purpose of any AA group is to carry the AA message to alcoholics, and alcoholics is written in italics. Experience with alcohol is one thing all AA members have in common. It is misleading to hint or to give the impression that AA solves other problems or knows what to do about drug addiction. Period. End of sentence. It is misleading to hint or give the impression that AA knows what to do about drug addiction. So when I'm in a meeting and I'm talking about being clean and sober and my drinking and using, I don't know, is that, and we can talk about implied affiliation next week. I was all set to talk about implied affiliation this week. But yeah, it is my job to give an adequate presentation of what AA is in my shares. And when I'm talking about being an ANDA or drinking and using or whatnot, and I said last week, you know, one of the questions was about being an ANDA. Is that against the third tradition? Absolutely not. The third tradition just requires you to be an alcoholic. It doesn't, you know, you can call yourself 50 different things so long as you throw alcoholism in there, right? I said that I would finish answering that question when we're getting on the fifth tradition. Being an ANDA, absolutely, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, those against the fifth tradition, because we're implying that AA, a duality of identification in a single purpose fellowship implies a duality of purpose in a single purpose fellowship. And so when I had this service sponsor who used to talk about a hat check. I didn't know what a hat check was. She says it's before my time. Okay. So I had to ask. She says, back in the day, people would go to the movies or the opera or something. And at the door, they would be given a ticket and the person that's taking their coat or their hat or their camera or whatever gives them a ticket. And so when they go in, they can enjoy themselves without having to pack around their, you know, purse or whatever. And then on the way out, they turn in their ticket and they get their stuff back. That's what I do with my outside issues in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I'm walking through the exit sign, right, the threshold of an AA meeting, all of a sudden I'm checking all my issues at the door. And when I'm in an AA meeting, in respect to this fifth tradition, I'm not what I do for a living. I'm not what denomination I am, or if I'm a, you know, if I go to church, or if I'm an atheist, or if I all of the other outside issues that I came in with, I'm not those things. I'm an alcoholic among alcoholics. I'm not Republican. I'm not Democrat. I'm just an alcoholic. I'm no better than you. I'm no worse than you. And most importantly, because my life depends on it, I'm no different than you. There's no second class citizens. And when I call myself something in addition to alcoholism, I'm setting myself apart instead of becoming a part of. And page 17 of Alcoholics Anonymous speaks, I think, so beautifully to our primary purpose. So I'm going to turn to page 17. This page is pretty much our our fifth tradition. So about halfway down the page, because I don't have time, I'm running out of time now, but We got, unlike the feeling of a ship's passengers, however, our joy and escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. Here we go. The feeling of having shared in a common peril, not a similar peril, a common peril. And a peril is a danger, right? So the same danger is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. So that's one of the elements. And then it says, but that in itself would have never held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution, common peril and common solution equal the cement that binds us. And that it is what sustains us in unity. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. And wouldn't it be beautiful? Imagine a time, imagine an AA, a perfect AA, where this would be true for still today. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to all who suffer from alcoholism. So when we start bringing in our outside help, that does the same thing as talking about our outside issues, right? So we want to share about our common problem, but then we want to share about our common solution. Now, if you do yoga in addition, that's amazing. That's awesome if that supports your sobriety. If you also read outside literature, if you also go to church, and you read the Bible, that's amazing. I'm all for that stuff. If you also use essential oils, wonderful. If you have a diet plan that works for you, that's amazing. But all of that is not AA. That's not our common solution. That's like the additional stuff that supports our common solution, right? So we all come in with different, with additional issues, but we focus on our common issue. And then we all come in using, in addition to AA, church, outside literature, exercise, diet plans, but those are outside help. And so when we're in AA, we talk about our common solution that this book outlines. And so that common peril and the common solution equal cement. That's a foundation. The entire foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous rests upon this principle. And that's what I'm going to close with in tradition five in the 12 and 12, that first line. I mean, this is some pretty extreme, powerful, pertinent language that they use here. Shoemaker, stick to thy last. Better to do one thing supremely well than many badly. That is the central theme of this tradition. This is the paragraph. This is the sentence. It's one sentence that I want everybody to take to heart. Around it, our society gathers in unity. The very life of our fellowship requires the preservation of this principle. And with that, that's what I have to share on tradition five tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Terry. So I have two things I'm going to share on screen before I introduce Billy. One of them is later on tonight. I know that Carrie will be talking about CPC and PI at a workshop. So there it is on screen if you're interested. I know that as we get together and we come back in person from a lot of the online stuff this past year, we've been getting active in cooperation with the professional community as well as public information. So there it is for anybody interested. But up next, I'm really excited to share this one, which is concept five in relation to how do you submit a concept five right of appeal and petition. That is this Sunday, since Billy is here tonight talking about concept five, I find it quite fitting that we share with you that my home group will be doing this Sunday with Billy. So thank you, Billy, for both of those things as I introduce you. And we're gonna talk about concept five tonight. So here's concept five. Throughout our world services structure, a traditional right of appeal ought to prevail, thus assuring us that minority opinion will be heard and that petitions for the redress of personal grievances will be carefully considered. And with that, I give you Billy N. from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Thank you, Billy, for being with us tonight.
Thanks, Billy Alcoholic. And good to be here, everybody. And Dee already read the concept, so I probably won't read it to you again. But I do want to explain both the kind of practical and then a little bit of the theoretical. But this concept really talks about two different things. And sometimes we confuse them or mix them all together. And I'm going to try to talk about that a little so that we can make it simple. The first thing we're going to talk about is why we have a minority opinion or a right of appeal, either one. It is not so that I can show everybody that I really am smarter than everyone else. That is not the reason for that minority opinion. It is not so that I can watch a room full of people make a horrible decision, and then finally they can hear the words come out of my mouth and realize the error they've just made and thank me for bringing it to their attention and changing their vote. But I would tell you that that sounds ridiculous today, but it's probably a time when I probably believed a little of that. Minority opinion has nothing to do with who's right and who's wrong. It has to do with our number one cherished quality of unity. That's why it's there. It's to make sure that even if you're on the losing side of a vote by like 29-1, that we care so much about unity of Alcoholics Anonymous that we're willing to hear what you have to say after the vote. So let's talk about those two things. First one is minority appeal. So how do we see this usually carried out in groups, districts sometimes even areas? A lot of times what you will see is there is a vote and the chairperson will say, would anyone from the minority like to speak? And someone will speak, and I've seen it where the chairperson just says, hey, does anyone want to change their vote yet? And one person says yes. And the chairperson says, okay, we're going to another vote. I'm not saying that's wrong. Every group is free to do what they want to. But I want to share how minority opinion works at the General Service Conference so that you are really familiar with it. At the General Service Conference, after a vote, the chair does not have to ask for a minority opinion, but they usually do. But if the chair did not ask for a minority opinion, I could simply walk up to the microphone and the chair would recognize me. And I would say my name and my service position. And I would say, I would like to give minority opinion on that last vote. Now, it's one of the few places in AA service material where we kind of use prevailing and losing, or prevailing and non-prevailing. Because at the conference, 2/3 is required to carry something, which means that sometimes the minority is larger than the majority. How is that possible? Well, let's say there was 100 people voting, and let's say 55 people voted in favor of it. But 55 people is not 2/3 of 100 people. The prevailing side would be the other 45, because they won the vote. because the vote didn't pass. And at the conference, minority opinion has to be given by somebody that voted in the side that did not prevail, the losing side. And it can be more than one or two people at the conference. Somebody has to make a motion to reconsider. That person has to be from the non-prevailing side. That motion to reconsider can be seconded by anybody. And then a vote has to be taken. Does the conference want to reconsider the motion? It has to pass by majority. If the majority of the room do not want to reconsider it, it's over. If the majority in the room that vote do want to reconsider it, then debate and discussion open up again. And that is taken until we get to the next second vote, which could come by a natural death of nobody at the microphone. But since this is AA, a lot of times that comes because someone makes a motion to call the question. Once that second vote is taken, that's it. It's final. We don't have minority opinion after the second vote. And minority opinion is, it's as AA as coffee is. It's who we are. The second type is the right of appeal or petition. And that is very different. And even at the General Service Conference, I'm not sure we have a process that we think is the process for right of petition or appeal. But your area or your district, so what's the difference between right of petition and appeal and a minority opinion? Well, it's after a vote's been taken, even twice. It's like weeks later or months later. And a concerned AA or a concerned group or a concerned district says, you know, that was a big mistake. But you have to read the service manual to really understand when should you use a right of petition. It's not because you don't like the color of a new pamphlet. That's for sure. The service manual says it's for grave matters. Grave matters. Usually matters when you think AA tradition or something to do with the charter or the concepts is definitely not being followed. And minority opinion, a lot of times minority petition, sometimes just the writing in and sending of that letter will send a message, but it's different than a new agenda item. It's not just an agenda item. It's a person or a body in AA who believes a real, real error was made. And often it's not about the issue, but about the process. We all have different opinions in AA. But when you think something is grave, usually it's because the AA process wasn't followed, or an AA tradition is clearly being ignored. And I mean, we're having the workshop next Sunday night only because it's amazing to me how many questions I've gotten about this since this year's conference. You know, I kind of think like this year's conference is kind of like the cherry on top of COVID, of kicking people in the ass, getting them involved in the traditions and service. That the people who called me who were mad about the preamble, those people I expect But how many of the people who called me didn't even know that it was being discussed at this year's conference? When people like that call me, I do not tell them to file a petition. I tell them they probably want to start with getting a GSR. That if you or your group had no idea we were discussing the preamble this year, I don't think you need to jump to eighth grade. Let's just start in kindergarten, spiritual kindergarten, as Bill W. called it. And let's make sure your group has a GSR. And then let's make sure that your group allows your GSR to give a report in the proper time. And let's make sure your GSR, your group, does not make it and does not make economic condition a requirement for being the GSR. In other words, if your group can't afford to send your GSR to the assemblies and the district meetings, I hate to tell you this, but your group might not be able to be a group anymore. Like, part of being a group is being able to send that GSR to the assembly, to the district meeting. But there are plenty of people who called me who did have a GSR. And, you know, I've tried to walk them through, if they're very upset, you know, what could they do? And I've seen a couple of minority appeal letters or petition letters that have gone in. I think what I would like to stress is, if you are a chairperson or a DCM, or even the person on the winning side of a vote, don't get upset with the minority opinion that's opposite than you. You should embrace that that's what our concepts guarantee every one of us. What I would say is this, though. I think sometimes the most important sign in an AA meeting is the exit sign. Because when you walk out of that room under that exit sign, your job is to embrace the group conscience 99.9% of the time. The vote was taken, minority opinion was given, a new vote happened, and the group conscience was spoken. God spoke through the group conscience. So when you leave those meetings, if you're like me, it's easy to want to get working on something that I'm in favor of. But if you're trying to improve your spiritual team building skills, then get behind something that you were not in favor of. Do the action that the group voted to do that you were against, and embrace the group conscience. Sometimes what we see today is people walk out the door and they text all their friends that skipped the business meeting. And they say, hey, you better get to the next business meeting. You won't believe what the group did tonight. Well, that's really not minority opinion. That's kind of enabling bad AA members. That's kind of like saying, well, I'll only tell my friends to come to the business meeting if I don't get my way. But if it is grave, like maybe the doctor's, the plain language big book or the preamble, I could get my mind to believe that that is a big enough significant policy change that maybe you could write a letter of petition. And if that's how you feel, that's what you should do. Letters of appeal or petition are often handled like agenda items. You could write one as an individual, and you have every right. But whoever you're appealing it to is going to read it and know it just came from you. And I would suggest that if you think something grave has happened at the conference or at your district or area, start with your group. Have your group sign the appeal. Have your district sign the appeal. Or have your area sign the petition of appeal. Sometimes people think this doesn't work. And what I want to share with you is the reason there are very few examples of the right of petition and appeal is because that's how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to embrace the group conscience most of the time. But every once in a while, across the AA landscape, something happens that creates a real right of petition. And my experience is, if you tell people to handle it the proper way and tell them, you know, we know the non-proper way in AA, is to show up at your next assembly and go to the microphone and basically throw a grenade in the middle of the room. And, you know, that's not what this is about. If you're going to write a proper right petition, then I would expect that whatever you think was a grave mistake, you can point to a couple of places in AA literature in your right of petition where you clearly quote that what is happening does not coincide with the group conscience of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is described in its literature. So again, I'm not telling people not to do it. I'm just saying to be responsible and practical. Thanks. Thanks, Dee.
Thank you so much, Billy. I see all the hands clapping for both of you. And that's the part I miss about doing this online stuff is that we don't get to hear that static and the noise, you know, that noise, the fun noise. So thank you both tonight for being here. I sent Carrie some questions. Billy, I had a couple come in. I'm going to send you two and we'll move right into questions. We'll start with you, Carrie. You got a few lined up, ready to go.
I'm sorry, I wasn't even looking at the chat, but yeah, I can. I see them now. How do we help the non-alcoholic pill or drug addict? But they spelt it as addict, like A-T-T-I-C, which I love because I did that for years when they show up to our groups. What can we do for them? Where does it tell us that in the literature? I know what I've done for them. But that is only based on, yeah, Bill Wilson's suggestion. So Bill Wilson writes in Problems Other Than Alcohol. I would give you a page number. They don't have any. So I don't know. I think it's like the last page of this, depending on which way you're looking at it, but, this article was written in the Grapevine, or written for the Grapevine in 1958 when we started having a lot of, he mentions heroin. There was heroin back then. Bill Wilson mentions heroin in this article when a lot of heroin addicts started coming in and, you know, people with problems other than alcohol. I think that's why it's called Problems Other Than Alcohol. This is also can be found in Language of the Heart, I think on page 224. But he says, lists a bunch of stuff that we can't do, right? I mean, one of them is we cannot give AA membership to non-alcoholic narcotic addicts, like period. And actually, you know, for anybody who knows Bill's writing, you know that Bill doesn't use a whole lot of absolutes, right? He uses ought not and suggested. And this is one of the only places that I've ever found in Bill's writing that he says no exceptions and it's talking about the non-alcoholic drug addict. And he says, therefore, I see no way of making non-alcoholic addicts into AA members. Experience says loudly that we can admit no exceptions. So what? Even when my case is different because I live in a small town, no exceptions. That would be an exception. But what if this person doesn't have anywhere else to go? No exceptions. So, then what can we do, right? And after this long list of things that we can't do to help people with problems other than alcohol, he finally gets to what we can do. And so he says on the last page, there seems to be no reason why several AAs can't join, if they wish, with a group of addicts to solve the drug and alcohol problem together. But obviously, such a dual-purpose group should not insist that it be called AA, nor should it use the AA name. And so, you know, I know that we think, and I speak, you know, for myself as well, that AA is the mothership, right? Nothing's better than AA. We have the original message. It's arrogant. It's arrogant. There's a lot of other 12-step fellowships out there, even 12-step fellowships that use the big book. And Bill says, don't be arrogant. Join with them. If you think that, you know, I mean, I can't because I don't have a heroin addiction. I don't have a meth addiction. I can't carry the message to those other 12-step fellowships, but I can help behind the scenes to help. Just because I can't help a non-alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean that I can't help them to find the help that they need. And walking someone hand in hand to call Heroin Anonymous, World Services, and ordering a startup kit is something that I can help them to do. And it's something that I have done. And, you know, thanks to taking the time instead of just pointing to the door, I've been a witness to lots of heroin addicts finding recovery through some of the women that I sponsor that I'm not uniquely qualified to help. I'm not uniquely qualified to help these women, but some of the women that I sponsor who are both alcoholic and heroin addicts are uniquely qualified to help these people that I'm not. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And lives are being saved outside of AA. Do you want to go to Billy?
Yep, thank you. Thank you so much, Carrie. What do you got, Billy? I know I sent you a few.
Okay, let's see. Who decides that an issue is grave and eligible for an appeal? Shouldn't we respect the decisions made by a General Service Conference delegates? Well, I think it's up to you to decide, or whatever body is writing the appeal, that you consider it grave. And you should explain why in your letter, why you consider it grave. Of course, we should respect the decisions made by the General Service Conference. But if you do think an issue is grave, then I would send it in. But I would also say this. It seems lately issues just keep getting put on the conference agenda over and over. If it doesn't pass, we just put it on again. So, but I don't think submitting a petition is not respecting the delegates. Let's see. Why is a floor action allowed for an agenda item that doesn't make it out of committee? Because those are the rules. You can make a floor action basically about anything. And if the floor doesn't want to deal with it, somebody will make a motion to not entertain it. And if it gets 3/4 votes, it's done. What time was the vote taken on the plain language big book and the preamble and why? How is this information validated? Plain language big book, I do not know. Preamble, very late. But you could talk to your delegate. And then I'll just get rid of this last one. Examples of successful appeals. I'll talk about two. One, maybe I might talk about three. Again, like I said, it doesn't have to come to a vote with an appeal. Sometimes exercising your right of petition causes events to take place. So in 1995, the International Convention was held in San Diego. In 1988, the city of San Diego had promised us that the light rail would be finished and people would be able to go from downtown San Diego to Jack Murphy Stadium. And the city of San Diego promised in its contract that if that light rail was not finished, they would pay for buses. The light rail was not on time. That's not news to any of us. Construction and roads was not on time. The city of San Diego was willing to pay for the buses. But their rules, because they're a government, about how they have to let everyone, every bus company in California, bid for the business, they didn't have enough time to do that before the convention. So the city of San Diego said, well, that's fine, AA. You get a contract and we'll just pay you. And so it was $800,000, and the city of San Diego reimbursed our $800,000 bus cost. The problem is that the trustees didn't put it in the final conference report, in the convention report. They kind of hid the fact that the city of San Diego gave us $800,000. And a trustee named Gay G, from Georgia, you can read a lot of articles she wrote in the grapevine about singleness of purpose and other things. She was a prolific writer. She filed the appeal letter on that. Now, it was never officially voted on, but the General Service Board did get up at a conference in 1999 and said, we hear you loud and clear. We won't do that again. The other appeal I would talk about is last year during the pandemic, one of our local intergroup central offices voted to suspend its rules on taking money from estates. And they kind of had the same guidelines that GSO had, which was, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 one time, whatever. And they suspended the rules to take like over $100,000 just one time. And they would use it for special projects. And there was a group of people in that intergroup area who did file an appeal and asked for the groups to be involved, not just the intergroup steering committee. And that passed. So there's plenty of time. There's plenty of examples. Thank you.
I just posted an article by Gay G in the chat that is an amazing singleness of purpose article. I love, thank you for reminding me about her, Billy. So I have a lot of questions.
And for those, by the way, that can't get it out of the chat, maybe we'll post it in the file link.
Okay.
So that the people have it to access. Yep, I'll make sure that gets done.
Okay, I kind of feel like some of these questions are being asked by people who already know the answer and they want everyone else to know the answer. I used to do that too, but I'll answer them anyway. So tradition five question, I was asked to lead and speak on a meeting named More About More Than Just Alcohol. They very openly discuss anything. I told them I could not because of the inflammations do not fall in line with the traditions. And, you know, and the rest of this is something that I've been through a lot of times. The last time was just a couple of weeks ago. I was asked to speak at a meeting. You know, I showed up at the meeting. I got dressed up, you know, I suited up and I showed up. And it was not in alignment with my understanding of singleness of purpose. And, I, you know, thanked the meeting with respect for inviting me. And I told them that the format of their meeting is not in alignment with my principles and that I'm sure that someone else, can fill in for me, but I had to but I had to leave. And I did. I don't put my name on things that aren't in alignment with the AA principles unless they don't have the AA name being attached to them. And that's my responsibility. I do remember I was, I drove 3 hours to speak at this group. This was a few years back. I drove 3 hours to speak at this group that the email, it didn't say anything about it being a fellowship, Narcotics Anonymous, didn't say anything about it. And I get there and I'm listening to their preamble and it's not the same as ours. And it dawns on me that I'm the main speaker at a meeting of a fellowship that I don't even, and so I had to tell I went to the bathroom first and I prayed in the stall and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And it came to me very quickly. And I went out and I had to tell the secretary or whoever it was. I said, I am so sorry that this happened, but although I haven't done drugs in years, I don't have a drug problem and I am an alcoholic, but I've recovered from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know anything about the message of the basic text. I mean, they have threefold. We have twofold. They have just for today. We have one day at a time. It's a whole different language. And so I, with my tail between my legs, drove my happy butt 3 hours back to Bend and didn't speak. And, and it's not like I get to go after these groups, not the NA, but it's not like when I'm invited to speak somewhere, I get to go after the groups and say, you shouldn't be listed in the directory and blah, blah, blah. It's just that I can't participate in it. I'm responsible for what I do, not for what they do. This Sunday's flyer, oh, that's okay. Is the fifth tradition the main reason the light was left on when I arrived? I like that question. Yeah, absolutely. All of the traditions it is the reason why we still have the message of Alcoholics Anonymous today. And I hear some people who maybe have never been involved in general service say things like, well, so long as there's a big book in my hand and another alcoholic, I'll keep this thing moving. Okay, absolutely. But who publishes that big book? Who gets the meeting directories out? Who answers the hotline call? Who patches you through to that newcomer? Who cooperates with the hospital to allow you to go into the hospital? I mean, all of this stuff, and Billy always says, Brooke, and the steps are our message. The traditions protect that message and the concepts perpetuate that message. So without the traditions, our message would have been garbled and gone a long time ago. Is AA, I'll try my best with this one. Is the term co-addiction, in AA is the term co-addiction used, mentioning you can be an alcoholic and a prescription and have a prescription addiction. Does it matter what order they're in? Okay, so whether you are 90% a cocaine addict or a prescription pill addict and only 5% alcoholic, which is not for me to decide. It doesn't matter. If you are alcoholic, you're not kind of pregnant. You're not kind of alcoholic. You're either alcoholic or you're not. If you're an alcoholic, you're a member of AA and there's no second class citizens. So even if your other addiction is so much bigger than your alcoholism, if you're an alcoholic, you're a member of AA when you say you are. If you're not an alcoholic, you're not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how many other addictions you have. And so it's really as simple as that. It doesn't matter how many other things we suffer from. And no, AA has no opinion on co-addiction. We don't deal with co-addiction. We don't even deal with addiction, period. I don't know if you guys have noticed in our literature, it's not about addiction. There's 200 other 12-step fellowships out there that deal with addiction. Alcoholism and addiction are two very different monsters. They look the same on the surface. They dress the same. They even talk the same. They are not the same. We deal with alcoholism, not addiction. I've never been addicted to anything in my, well, I tried to quit drinking coffee once and it gave me a really bad migraine headache for 3 days, but I've never been addicted to alcohol physically to where I've never had to go through the DTs. What makes me an alcoholic, I've never had to go into detox. What makes me an alcoholic is once I start drinking, I suffer from a phenomenon of craving that I can't put that drink down. And that was from the get. I didn't drink my way into alcoholism. You can use your way into any addiction. You can't drink your way into alcoholism. What makes me an alcoholic is I'm on page 21 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I answer yes to both questions on page 44 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, if you want to talk about addiction, that's toward the bottom of page 20 on the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It talks about somebody can have the habit badly enough, and alcoholism isn't a habit. Someone can have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him and maybe even kill him a few years before his time. But given a sufficient reason, ill health, warning from a doctor, yada, 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 that man can stop or moderate. He might even find that he may need medical attention, meaning you might even have to go into detox because you're so physically addicted to alcohol. But guess what? The next paragraph says, but what about the real alcoholic? He may or may not start off a hard drinker. He may or may not continue to be an everyday drinker. It says he might not ever become a drinker, a hard drinker. The difference is what happens once he starts drinking, he can't stop. And once I'm stopped, I can't stay stopped. And that's the difference between alcoholism and addiction, according to the Big Book of AA. Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie. Billy, what you got for me?
Okay. Let's see. In the current conference charter, there's a provision that allows appeals to be brought by members of the conference below the conference level on the service triangle. How often have you seen that provision used? What I would tell you about that, I just want to look at it quickly. I don't want to misquote. So it's in Article 4. What I would say about that line is it's about the worst grammar and English of maybe any sentence in our conference charter. It could be construed or debated by concepts experts, so to speak, a million different ways. It's easy to read it to say, I mean, if you wanted to, but it doesn't have grammar, which makes it so hard. Members of the conference, okay. We know who's a member of the conference. Delegates, trustees, non-trustee directors and staff. Below the conference level on the service triangle. So the conference level, what are they saying? Are they saying that only people below the conference can make it? Are they saying that people below it can make it? It's very, very confusing. I think that language needs to be cleaned up. When does it hurt or help or hurt in deciding to go to a fifth vote or not, trying to figure out when is good for the hat or simple majority, that whole process? Well, we don't have minority appeal in third legacy voting. Those are two separate things. Third legacy voting is how we elect people. We don't have a minority appeal. If you're talking about third legacy voting, after the fourth ballot, we automatically go to the hat. A a lot of people think you make a motion to go to the hat. No, the motion would be to go to a fifth ballot. And if that motion passes, then there would be a fifth ballot before the hat. If there is no motion for the hat, then after the fourth ballot, we would go immediately to the hat. I think it's up to each individual to know whether they should make a motion to have a fifth ballot. In a group conscience at group level, if a vote is two-thirds majority, should group be asking for minority opinion also and asking if anyone wants to change their vote? If they don't ask for opinion, am I allowed to just walk up to the mic and offer it anyway? Would this also apply to my district and area? Well, first thing I would say is two-thirds and simple majority have nothing to do with minority opinion. We respect the minority opinion regardless of the vote that's needed to pass something. As far as you walking up to a microphone or at your district or your area, what I would do before you do that is maybe put the fifth concept as a item to talk about at your district meeting. Let other people hear about it so that they know about it. That's what I would do. There was one more here. I know each group is autonomous, but is there anything in writing that discusses how often a home group could revisit a decision that's been voted on in the group conscience? Not that I'm aware of. And at the conference, no conference action is binding upon another. And if you were alive and in AA in the 80s and early 90s, you would have been at the same meeting, same business meeting, and you would be voting on smoking every month. And it was just a matter of, are there more non-smokers or smokers at the business meeting tonight? And then as soon as it got announced the next week that the meeting was now non-smoking, all the smokers would come to the next business meeting. So hopefully we can, you know, not put it on. But I would tell you this. If someone keeps putting someone, making a motion, you don't have to discuss it. Someone else can simply make a motion that I make a motion, we don't discuss this. And vote on that instead of the motion, if it's something that somebody just keeps bringing back no matter what. I do not believe I have any more questions. I do not, Dee. I'm good.
All right. Thank you so much. I think we got one last one from Carrie, and then she's you got another workshop to attend, so we'll be closing out. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, this is actually a really good question. Not that the other ones weren't. Now I've lost it. Shoot. Oh, here it is. Singleness of purpose at open meetings. Would you address visiting members of Al-Anon at an open meeting sharing? I love this question because I don't know when it happened, whether it was just the past few, you know, decades or the past few years, but for some reason, I think a lot of our fellowship thinks that open meetings mean you can talk about more things than alcohol. And it's actually the reverse of that. In fact, our sponsorship pamphlet, which I haven't dug into until last night for the first time in years, even addresses that if a newcomer has questions or, you know, wants to talk about things that aren't, you know, necessarily AA related, a closed group is probably where you should go to do that. And the reason why is the only difference between an open meeting and a closed meeting is that open meetings, we invite the reason why we have open meetings is to invite the professionals and family members and the outside world to come and see what we do and what we do not do, what we are and what we are not. So in an open meeting, I have to be on my best behavior. I don't drop the F-bomb. I'm representing Alcoholics Anonymous. I stick very close to singleness of purpose. I'm representing AA in an open meeting. In a closed meeting, we're all just a bunch of drunks. So the F-bomb, it's going to slip out once in a while. And if I need to talk about an outside issue, I might label it as an outside issue. I might not divert myself from the rest of you by getting specific with a sugar addiction or whatever. I might say, I'm struggling with an outside issue. But those things are okay to do in a closed meeting. In an open meeting, we want to make sure that we're carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and that only alcoholics are participating, because that's our show place. That is our, that's, and I'll just read out of page 186 in the 12 and 12. So in the very beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous, we didn't have open or closed meetings. They were just AA meetings, right? Al-Anons would brew pots of coffee. Our wives would brew pots of coffee and all of that stuff, right? It was just AA meetings. And then once Al-Anon family groups started 12 years after the Big Book was written, all of the meetings became closed meetings. They weren't titled closed meetings, but if you weren't an alcoholic, you weren't welcome because the Al-Anons had somewhere to go, right? And then a couple years later, they started thinking, well, we want people to know what AA is and isn't. How are we going to do that? And it says here, consequently, many groups begun to hold meetings which were open to interested friends and to the public so that the average citizen could see for himself just what AA was all about. So open meetings are to show the public what we're all about. It's not to open the doors for non-alcoholics to get recovery. That's what other 12-step fellowships are for. Thank you.
Thank you. Billy, there was one last one. Did you want to address that, or do we want to divert that to Sunday's workshop? I didn't know.
Let me just see it. Deadline to request for an agenda item at 2022 conference. Is it up to the delegate to decide if it will be submitted? Does it have to go through the delegate? Well, the delegate for 2022, the deadline for 2022, which will be the 72nd General Service Conference, was September 15th that passed. So anything you submit now will be on the 23rd General Service Conference agenda. Is it up to the delegate to decide if it's submitted? Absolutely not. You could ask the delegate if maybe they want the area to vote on it and get the area to send it in under the area banner. But under our system, we have great freedom for equality and equity, and delegates have no special privileges regarding agenda items compared to an AA member. The only special privilege they have is they get to vote at the conference for 2 years. Thanks.
Awesome. All right. And thank you both so much for being here with us again this evening. We went 10 minutes over. I apologize. With that, let me just remind you guys, come back Sunday. The link is in the chat. And any other resources tonight, I know Carrie mentioned questions on sponsorship and also problems other than alcohol, as well as there was the grapevine piece from Gail. We'll try to make sure that gets posted in our link as well. So anyway, thank you all so much, and we'll close with the responsibility statement. Ready? All right. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible.